Donalana Kitchen talks about food. Donalana Kitchen talks recipes. Donalana Kitchen talks about lots of other things on Community Radio.
The Donalana Kitchen Show is sponsored in part by the Mucky Duck Pub, where pub means community. More information can be found at www.themuckyduckpub.com or from Marcus at telephone number 232-8888.
Welcome to the Donalana Kitchen. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Prishkintas.
We gather here once a week at the station of KHOI Community Radio. We talk about food, farming advice, recipes, and opinions. And thanks for joining us today. So I think there's a hint of spring in the air.
Well, it's melting everywhere.
It's melting. Yeah, after our trial by ice, now we have trial by melting. Be careful where you step out there, folks. And if you go outside and you listen very carefully, you can hear it's happening. The sap is moving in the trees. There is some.
You can hear it?
Oh, no. Only if you listen very carefully. And for those who are attuned to that sort of thing, it's like kind of like hearing the corn grow. You know?
Okay.
Because there is some maple tapping happening, and there's some maple syrup happening actually on my farm, and it is just kind of a nice thing to do this time of year. This happens only when temperatures are below freezing at night and above freezing during the day, and then those trees get busy starting to pump that sap, and we're glad they do. We are glad they do. I've got also a little note here to remind you to tell you that I had a bird sighting. Actually, two birds. I saw, now this is before the big storm the other week, two pileated woodpeckers were in my driveway as I drove in. They were on the side of a tree doing what woodpeckers do on the side of a tree. And I was with my husband at the time.
The pileated ones are the big ones?
Big things. Big ones. Kind of a woody woodpecker looking head with the tuft off to the back. And true to form, my husband was in the car with me, and all I could say was, but I couldn't even get the words out. But there they were, and he saw them too. And I talked to my friend Bruce Ayersman, who knows about these things, and he said, well, if you have a pair, they just may be looking for a place to spend the summer. So I hope they stick around. I haven't seen them since, but keep your eyes out, those big, big pileated woodpeckers. And they're the ones you can't quite get the words out when you see them because they're quite a shock. Yes, they are. Okay. Well, it's time to think of spring a little bit here. Today on the Donalana Kitchen, we're going to consider the garden and planting season. It's time to think of seeds, soil, compost, and we're going to take a look at a book about manure by the author Gene Logsdon. Yeah, of all people, he would write something like that. That's later in the show. In the meantime, a few Donalana Kitchen shows ago, a couple years ago now, Donna asked me how I start seeds this time of year in my greenhouse.
And so, yeah, because Lana's really good at this.
Well, I've been doing it a while, yeah. and it's just a pleasure to do. And so here is a little quick tutorial about starting seeds. I already have many things up and growing in my greenhouse, and I'd encourage you to think of your garden, think of something, plant a seed and nurture it, and you can learn a lot from doing that.
Wait a minute. We have between Lana and I am the world's worst seed starter. And Lana is going to give me live on-air instructions. Seed starting for dummies.
seed starting for Donna. There we go.
Dummy Donna. It's not a skill set that I am very good at.
Seeds being a little kind of self-enclosed bit of magic, they already include the germ of life, the potential plant inside of them. Actually, for the first couple days or even a week or so that the seed is in the soil with light and heat and moisture to get it going, it really has all it needs to grow and to start shooting up toward the sun, kind of like a chicken egg. There's an embryo in there. But there are things that we can do to make sure that your plants do well. I want to talk mainly about some hints for your containers and hints for soil. You have to put these seeds into something. I know there's hydroponic sort of things. You can grow things with just with fancy additives and water, but I don't know how to do that. If you're going to grow
something, I'm frankly suspicious of this. I know this could get me in trouble with some farmers, but I'm really into the soil.
The soil is a good thing, and since we're in Iowa, I think that's another thing we should celebrate when we talk about plants and animals, because all species sort of depend on that sort of thing. Treat your soil as a living thing, and a real handy hint is before you plant anything into the soil, moisten it a little bit. And remember that it needs air in that soil and
moisture.
Well,
no, wait a minute. Let's be specific. You don't mean just spit on it, Lana. What do you mean by moisten?
Moisten it with water. And I brought along some visual aids here. We'll hold them up to the
microphone. Yes.
See, I have a planting mix here, which is a little bit of garden soil, a little bit of potting mix, which can have some sphagnum moss in it. It can have some vermiculite and things to keep things airy. And it has some commercial potting mix. One good thing about commercial potting mixes is that they don't have any weed seeds in them. So remember, if you take in garden soil, you're going to get some weed seeds growing, but you can clip those off.
As long as you know which is which.
No, they usually have little pictures on the seed packets that help. It helps. You learn these things.
Read the directions.
Anyway,
is what I was saying,
instead of you putting into your container just a bunch of dry potting mix, which actually is really dusty looking. You want to moisten it a little bit. And if you feel it, it's...
I'm feeling it. Oh,
yeah.
It is moist.
It's moist and fluffy. My thought is how to describe this over the radio. Make sure, well, if you're going to plant a seed, make sure the soil sort of feels like slightly damp. If you made a nice plate of brownies that were really rich and kind of crumbled it, it's cake-like. It's cake-like and moist.
I think Lana's hoping I'll pick this up because she's making it in recipe language.
Yeah, since I grow a lot of seeds. What I do is take potting soil or any kind of mix that I want to make, and it's kind everybody kind of
brownies,
makes their own. Think of brownies. And put it in a separate little pan,
Like a tub of something.
Like a dish pan.
Mm-hmm.
Then I add water to that and stir it around, and let it sit for about 5 minutes. And it soaks up the water, especially if this soil has got peat moss in it.
And then I bet you fluff it with your fingers, don't you?
You can.
Ha-ha.
Mix, fluff.
Ha-ha.
And then put it into your containers. And the one word that I want to talk about, well, I talked about damp soil, important thing. Another important thing is containers, drainage. Put lots of holes
in the
bottom.
So she's got these little yogurt containers here or plastic cups, and then she's punched holes in the bottom of all of them.
Yes. And you'll fill these little containers full of dirt, put that on another tray, on a cookie sheet or something, and as you water, the water has to go through. Has to be able to drain, because the little seeds want water. They want a little structure to hold them in place. They want to be close to the surface because some of them do need light.
And Lana told me not to use egg cartons because they're not deep enough for the root system. Did I get that part right?
You got that right. I have tried things in egg cartons, and it sounds like a good idea because seeds are pretty small. But seeds not only go up, they go down, and there's not enough down in an egg carton.
Okay, so I could say that's probably my number one mistake. Mm-hmm. My potting pots weren't deep enough. Now, the other thing you talked about is how to keep them appropriately moist. Mm-hmm. This is, you know, it's like I feel like if I don't watch them every 5 minutes, they're going to either be too wet or too dry, and I suspect this is where I lose a lot of the little guys.
Yes, you do. Think of – when you grow things, put them in a real handy place. And be aware that it's kind of like having a new puppy. If you're going to start some life, there's a lot going on. And so visit it at least once or twice a day. But a real good solution, and you're going to be gone during the day, and you know it's going to be warm, and a lot of sunshine's going to hit it. Cover the potted seedlings with a piece of saran wrap, a piece of plastic.
This is before they sprout?
It can be before they sprout. You know, you don't want you just want it damp, but this is to hold in the moisture. Mm-hmm. And even as the sprout comes up a little bit, you can cover it, not tight, or a wet towel. In other words, you're making a little greenhouse, the moisture greenhouse. You want air to move. Occasionally, you lift that thing up and say hello and put it back. But that's a good way to keep things moist, especially if you're not there to visit it a lot. So there.
Okay, I'm going to try.
There you go.
I'm going to try some. What's that Mexican sunflower called? Tithonium?
Tithonia. Yeah.
That's what I'm going to experiment on.
That's a good one. Donna likes Tithonia, and I like Tithonia, too.
I like that word. Tithonia.
It's a Mexican sunflower, and it's just bright,
the butterflies
orange.
Love it.
Yes, it's wonderful.
And it usually comes so late in the garden that they're still hanging around when the frost comes. So I'm going to try to get a jump start on them this year.
Well, best of luck. Do read your seed packet. See how deep those little seedlings need to be.
Read the directions.
Read the directions.
If in doubt.
That helps.
Or you can be like me. I'm going to buy the rest of my already seedlinged, like my basils. I always buy them from Lana and other farmers at the farmer's market. But I do want to improve my skill set here. So.
Yeah, well, good heavens. You know how to cook for a crowd. You know how to cook all sorts of things. It's kind of like cooking. Oh, here, another little seed thing to think about when your little seeds are coming up. Most seeds come up out of the ground. And keep in mind, there's roots happening underneath. Mm-hmm. Doesn't look like much is going on top. There's roots underneath. The first two leaves that you see are called seed leaves or cotyledons or something like that. Those are not true leaves. Think of those as the little packet that holds the seed. That's a tiny little thing. So by the time it gets its first true leaves, which would look like four leaves if you're looking at the top, that's the time to think about, well, does this thing have enough? Does it have enough moisture? Does it have enough space? You might want to thin things out. So it doesn't really turn into a plant before the second group of leaves come on. So celebrate that day. And then they keep adding leaves. So there you go. Well, that's Lana's quick and dirty talk about dirt and plants. And so that's our discussion about
and
plants.
We'll see. There may be additional coaching sessions later.
We'll talk about other gardeny things as the season goes on. Welcome back. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. We're talking about starting seeds here a little bit. And yes, treating those seeds specially is a good thing to do this time of year. It's such a joy to go through all the seed catalogs that just seem to pile up in my mailbox long about Christmas time. And it seems to coming earlier and earlier each year. This year, I was Johnny on the spot. Yes, I was. And I got most of my seeds ordered just kind of right after the New Year's. Usually I'm kind of dithering away and not ordering. You can still order seeds, but it's a good thing I do because some seed varieties are hard to come by. A lot of people are discovering gardening. Kind of nice to see that happening. And seeds are a magic thing. One of my favorite seed catalogs that I like to refer to because it's got a lot of good information is the Fedco seed catalog. Fedco from Clinton, Maine. It's kind of like an old-fashioned catalog. It's on kind of a newsprint.
It's all black and white.
Black and white. I mean, many, many catalogs are just classier than all get out with full color photos. This is just chock full of tiny type and old fashioned, cuts, old fashioned printing cuts of vegetables and flowers and just packed top to bottom with things to read. So it takes a while to kind of get through the Fedco catalog, but I always order stuff from them because they're one of the catalogs that make sure that we get healthy seeds and fair traded seeds and non-GMO seeds. All that stuff is important. And also they have little words of wisdom and hints in between all of these things that you can order. Oh my goodness, this is a big catalog. I mean, 160 pages. That's what it is. Yes, it is. Right in the beginning here, they talk about their company principles here, and they always do that sort of thing, but they have a few words about seeds. A seed's value is in being planted, being shared, feeding families and communities. What does it take to grow a seed? Well, we don't really grow seeds. Seeds are grown by the plants themselves, but taking care and making sure things end up with the right labels on and taking care of all the special needs for each plant. You have to know these things. Picking and threshing and screening and sorting and finally testing for germination and then sending all this stuff out to us when we order them. And always hope for resilience because gardeners rely on other people to grow out their seeds. I save a few seeds myself, but I always rely on these good seed companies to do it for me. And so I know what I'm going to be getting. And one thing that you have to remember, seeds are not like gold. They don't last when they're hoarded. When they sit in a box, in a cupboard, they lose vitality and they wither and die. Seeds are meant to be planted, shared, grown out, and they keep growing and growing. A good thing. Seeds. Well, we talked a little bit about potting. Yes, I've given up putting things in egg cartons a long time ago, Donna. It doesn't work. But you can grow seeds pretty much in anything. One thing about seeds is that each plant is a little different. Each plant is a little you have to kind of learn what you're growing, and you can get a lot of that information from seed catalogs themselves. The Johnny's Seed Catalog Company. Johnny's Seeds from Winslow, Maine. It's one of those catalogs that has information for growers on every species in here, every kind of species. Like for squashes, it tells you about the culture and plant spacing and pests and how you harvest, how you store, days to maturity, germination guides. You don't really think you're going to need that information. And then long about this time of year, it's kind of nice to know how long a seed takes to germinate, how long it takes to get out of the ground, and how long it takes to turn into a little viable plant that you can actually transplant. It's a little early here in central Iowa to start many things. Maybe next week, maybe the week after. That's kind of when you want to start thinking about your tomatoes and peppers.
Have you started anything already?
Oh, let me tell you that. I've started things that are really hard to start, like woody perennials like woody herbs. I mean, like rosemary and parsley and lovage.
You're starting rosemary from seed?
Here's another little trick I find. The seed catalogs now have some of these tricky vegetables and herbs. They call them treated seeds. They are pre-treated. I think they soak them in something or other, but they are shelf-stable. But if you get a seed and they say they are primed, that and I don't normally go with primed seeds for anything else, but rosemary, I actually think that makes a difference because rosemary is notoriously hard for me to start. It just takes a long time, hard little seeds, and they take a long time to come up. But I ordered primed seeds from Johnny's Selected Seeds.
And you've started lovage, right?
And I've started lovage, yes. Again, all this stuff takes about 2 weeks before I even hope to have any little things sticking up from out of the ground. So it is a labor of love. It is all about trust and hope and all that sort of thing. But yes, that's the time. Of course, if you have a heated greenhouse and fancy things like that, you could be starting lots of things. But I do have a heating mat and I have some grow lights and I do have a greenhouse that doesn't have heat in. So I will be starting more, but I do have some of those hard to start seeds. And again, some of those seeds are bigger seeds. They can go under the ground a little bit. Rosemary, tiny, tiny little seeds. They need light to germinate. And, marjoram. I've tried that too. Again, sage also need light to germinate. And it's not that all I know how to do is read the directions, folks. I read things on the back of.
All right, Lana's being modest here. She actually has a very green thumb, and she has a real greenhouse at her house. That makes a huge difference.
Oh, does it ever? It is nice to have a place to capture the sun, because it is coming back, folks. It really is coming back. So I have started those things, and in the weeks to come, I will be starting more. It's quite a joy. I like getting my hands in the dirt. It's good. So besides the Fedco catalog and the Johnny's catalog, some other catalogs I really enjoy are the Seed Savers Exchange catalog from Decorah, Iowa. It's just, again, beautiful pictures. Donna, you said you get a catalog from or look online for Baker's Creek? That's
it. Yeah, I don't get as many catalogs as you do, but I get a few. And I did find that Baker's Creek, because I only grow herbs and flowers. The rest I just get from Lana, but there are certain flowers that I have to have every year, like nasturtiums and borage. And of course, Lana starts the Mexican sunflowers. So we have Tithonia. So last year because it was a pandemic, I didn't go out and buy. They have a lot of seeds out at Holub's. Mm-hmm. Lots and lots of seed packages. Yeah. A good place to go and browse. But this year I wanted to make sure I got what I wanted. So I ordered from, what's it called? Baker Seeds. It'll come in the mail soon.
Baker Creek.
Baker Creek.
I think they're either in Arkansas or Missouri. Somewhere.
Missouri, I think.
Someplace down south.
Someplace not too far away. But I have ordered some seeds and I'm ready to start.
Are ready. Yes, we are. And this time of year, you think, I want to plant something. Now, you're either going to have to go out and buy some commercial potting soil, because even if you take a shovel outside, I don't think you're going to get anything that's plantable.
No, I was thinking I've got to go get some. Is there anything I should look for in the package that I need to know on potting soil?
I get the cheapest. I always try to get some that has got some of that little vermiculite, the white speckles. Because the starting seeds,
it holds the moisture.
Yeah,
right?
It holds the moisture,
right.
And they really don't need fertilizer or compost or stuff until later, which is when you plant them.
They
outside.
Just need water. Now, do you mix your potting soil with some garden soil also? You do, right?
I do. I do with something. Okay. Not necessarily for starting seeds, but I will be planting taking these small seeds and putting them in bigger pots. Then I have garden soil.
Oh, so you don't go direct to garden.
No.
You transplant and, oh boy, you are so patient. No wonder your stuff works and mine doesn't, you know?
Well, you want to give them your best. Yes, you do. And I feel so with it this year because I actually remembered to bring some 5-gallon pails of compost into my greenhouse. It's not a frozen mass outside. I am ready, folks. Putting seeds in the dirt, it's a good time for that. So kind of dream of your garden. And it is not too late to order seeds. It certainly is not too late to plan your garden and start some things inside. You can always wait until much later and plant things directly in the garden too, but I kind of like to get a jump on things. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. You're listening to KHOI Community Radio. Donna Lana Kitchen is the tasty radio for the heart of Iowa. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. We are back. We are talking about seeds and soil today. Donna, what do you have to say about soil?
Wax rhapsodically here just a moment about soil. Two things I wanted to talk about. One is from last week we went into this book about smells called Nosedive by Harold McGee. And so he is writing about the smells of the soil and where they come from. And he says, undisturbed soil teems with life of all kinds, much of it as yet unidentified.
Huh.
So he's saying it's estimated that there are tens of billions of bacteria in every gram of soil and tens of thousands of different species of microbes, fungi included. Among them, minute worms and insects, the bulk of the most soil is roughly equal volumes of rock particles and the spaces in between them, either empty or filled with water. The small wet pores are usually occupied by bacteria and fungal hyphae, and they thread their way through the larger ones to find the rare oasis of plant or animal remains or living plant roots. So he is reminding us that the microbiome of the soil, as is the microbiome inside our intestines, there is a lot going on there that science does not yet understand. So it is very complicated. And we need to be respectful of that which we do not know and a little bit humbled by this. So the other quote that I wanted to give you is from a new book called The Restless and Relentless Mind of Wes Jackson, Searching for Sustainability by Robert Jensen. So Wes Jackson is the founder of the Land Institute and a longtime environmental whiz-bang wizard and an old friend of mine. And he often can say the funniest things but really profound. He's quite one of my favorite characters. So here's a little quote from Wes. He's always cautioning us about human hubris, basically, especially in terms of science. And you know, this new administration is going, okay, we're going to be science-based. Yes, that is important. But we also have to remember us little humans, even the ones of us that are perhaps well-studied scientists, there's so much we don't understand. And even from our own personal you know, our perspective of, he's talking, Wes is talking about here, he goes, quote, "We know that the earth revolves around the sun, but our daily experience is of standing on the ground that doesn't move." To correct that, we should take the time to feel the earth move. And then he says, this is Wes, "I have actually felt the earth turn. I can tell you how to do that. I've gone out there and laid down on the hill when the moon is full. And if you look at when the moon is coming up in the east and the sun is setting in the west, you've got to live in Kansas to do that, or Nebraska, or someplace flat. You can actually feel the earth turn. Do that sometime. It is a great moment. You've got to do that extra exercise to experience reality. Otherwise, we live with the illusion." So this is just to remind us that when we are out there digging in the dirt or the earth or whatever, there's so much more going on than we can comprehend. And to garden is to partake of a miracle, really. So get out there in the dirt, get ready for being out there in the dirt, and allow yourself to experience the mystery of life.
Yes. Feeling the earth move. Oh, yes. We are on a magic sphere here. This is good. Let's also turn our thoughts to things below our feet. And besides the dirt that we call dirt, soil.
And other processes that we have no comprehension of.
No comprehension, but we need it.
But it works, and we can see the results. Yes. Yeah.
I would like to talk about something that people don't want to talk about, but it sustains us. It is compost. It is using manure. It is
rot and decay.
Rot and decay. It's using things that you'd think, now if we didn't reuse this stuff, if it didn't compost down, if we didn't recycle, I think we would be in a large pile of it, wouldn't we? Yes, we would. But I've run across this great book, and I want to do this little disclaimer here. The author of this book is Jean Logsdon. Jean Logsdon has been known as the contrary farmer. He's written a number of books on farming and small scale agriculture.
And he's a good writer.
He is a great writer. Jean Logsdon. He from Ohio. He's written this book. The subtitle of this book is Managing Manure to Save Mankind. Now, a little disclaimer about the title, because this is radio, I will have to spell or leave something out of the title, but being the intelligent and creative audience that I know you are, you'll just follow right along.
Right, because there are certain words we are not allowed to use on radio.
Yes, would you believe it? I've actually had to fill out the appropriate forms in the past for saying the wrong thing. So anyway, the name of this book is Holy S... dot dot dot. Managing Manure to Save Mankind by Jean Logsdon. He has a lot of good things to say. Jean Logsdon wants to write and introduce us to our most misunderstood natural resource. One way or another, we not only throw away manure worth billions in fertilizer value, but spend a staggering amount of money to do so. And we're not just talking about cows and chickens, but just think of all the other things that also expel, including us. If we do not begin turning manure into fertilizer to help feed a growing population, we will be in big trouble, according to Logsdon. Holy S... dot, dot, dot book completely covers this manure field, including information on how to build the barn manure pack with farm animal manure. And he has been raising small scale farm animals and vegetables and stuff for a long time. He knows of where he speaks. How to recycle toilet water for irrigation purposes, and how to get over the fear of feces and learn to muck with the best of them. Yes, yes, yes. It's a really fun read because, like Donna said, Jean Logsdon is a good writer. He talks about Manure is being the new hot farm commodity. It really is valuable stuff. And instead of using chemical fertilizers, it really is good stuff. And he talks about animals being cooped up during the wintertime, and chickens and horses and goats and pigs. And one has to clean out their stalls. And I speak, I know of where I speak, because I have a chicken house that is full of, I suppose Gene Logsdon would call it, black gold stuff at the bottom there that I will have to shovel out one of these days. Actually, I do that 2-3 times a year. But after a winter when they spend a lot of time inside, that's some pretty good stuff. He also talks about cat litter and dog litter, and talks about our own digestive and elimination processes and dealing with our dread of human excrement. You'd think this would be kind of an icky book to read, but I found it was really fun. It was really fun. And he has a real fun chapter here on the pitchfork. Now, the pitchfork, if you garden, or especially if you have to clean out a chicken house or move any quantity of hay or straw, you need one of these things here. And I'm not talking a garden fork or a garden spade, which is much more like a large spoon where you're turning over dirt. Pitching really means pitching. You dive into this pile of stuff that has been bedding and you throw it, usually into a wheelbarrow or a manure spreader or into a pile. So there have been pitchforks designed for this because you need to move this stuff. They tend to be longer than a garden fork for one thing, and there's many different kinds. Gene Logsdon said, Grant Wood got it right with American Gothic, his painting of a stalwart Iowa farm couple standing in front of their house while the husband holds a pitchfork like a bishop brandishing his scepter is the essence of Americana. The pitchfork was the staff of agrarian culture upon which our society arose, and it symbolizes the primacy of farming in civilized life. Wood's painting says it loud and clear. The people who wield the pitchforks feed the world, and don't you forget it. He also kind of goes into the term flails and pitchforks, as in really angry peasants going off and on a riot. Pitchforks would be really handy for that, I'm afraid. And flails? Yes, flails are a instrument, a stick with a long beater on the front of it used to remove grain heads from grain. But this is about pitchforks. And there is a pitchfork for every occupation, depending on what you're picking up and where you want to throw it and how high. Before baling hay and things coming out in nice little tidy cubes and round barrel shaped things, hay used to have to be pitched on a wagon and put up loose. So imagine spending your day sticking your fork in a big wad of newly cut hay and throwing it up. You get a little tired doing that. Yes. So there are a couple of pitchforks. The first one is the manure forks. Generally has 4 tines in it with a handle 4 feet long. And then there's the bedding fork that is used to fluff things up. And he kind of puts down the bedding fork. That's just if you have a fancy horse stall, perhaps. There's the hay fork with 3 tines. The fodder fork, dealing with chopped hay. There is the bundle fork with only 2 tines if you're really good and can throw a bundle with 2 tines, a space about 8 inches apart with a 60-inch handle. The 2 tines work better than a three fork for picking up a sheaf of wheat or oats to load on the thresher or into the wagon. And there's a clover fork, and there is a silage fork, which has lots of tines. And like I said, then there's the other forks that are much more for potatoes and things like that, too.
Do you think we're so mechanized that a lot of these tools are not even available anymore? Like, I have my grandfather's pitchfork.
I've got a couple of old ones, too. Probably the different variations here are hard to find. But finding one that you want to spend some time with is important. You can find them at farm stores yet. You can ask for a pitchfork. And remember, it's for pitching things. He has a lot to say about how to use a pitchfork and not throw your back out. It's a repetitive.
Probably good to know.
Yeah, good to know, because it is a long process to clean out a stall after a winter of animals living primarily in a building. And he highly recommends keep putting hay in, keep putting bedding in, keep putting silage in, and let the animals do their business. And by the end of the season, you will have.
Oh, right. Because the adding the hay keeps it from compact.
Keeps it clean, keeps it fine for the animals. But now it's spring, folks. You have to clean that out. And yes, I've got a chicken house that is in that stage right now. So the idea is putting your lead hand, if you're right-handed, use your right hand toward the end of the long handle, the other hand about halfway down the handle, and then this kind of happens just, of course you'll figure this out as you do this, but use your knee, put your knee under that hand that is halfway down the handle before you lift. It will help you make a nice fulcrum there and help you lift your hay, which is a very good thing to do. And you'll be dealing with forkfuls and layers of stuff here. Don't take a lot at a time. It's an important thing. And once you get good at it and practice at it, you'll be able to know just how much to take. It may not be pleasant, but it is a important thing to do. Trying to describe fork work with words or even pictures cannot substitute for actually doing it. Go at it slow. It's always best to have a companion who likes to talk. There is something about slowly, patiently forking manure into a spreader or a wheelbarrow that encourages conversation almost as much as a sip or two of good whiskey. Philosophers would make great manure pitchers.
Right. So is he suggesting to sip the whiskey while you're doing the, or after?
I think perhaps after. Okay. Yeah. But the idea of taking it slow, it is a job that needs to be done, a job that needs to be done well, and do not throw your back out, folks. There's also, he also talks about places like China where they've been using what they call night soil.
Yes.
Night soil as an important amendment. And they've been growing food for people for centuries. All on the same ground. It's, we can do this. And also he mentions it is impolite, or it is more polite. If you have dinner at a person's house in China, be sure to use the restroom. Be sure to use the outhouse, because your contribution is much appreciated. And we have to learn to appreciate this stuff. So this book has lots of good reviews. It's called Holy F ... Managing Manure to Save Mankind by Gene Logsdon. And he also recommends two other books, and I've read these too. The first one is called The Humanure Handbook by Joseph Jenkins from Jenkins Press. That was published in 2005. It's about coming, what should we say, face to face with how to deal with our own biological processes. And the other one is called The Toilet Papers by Sim Vanderine from Chelsea Green Publishing, which talks about using human excrement for fertilizer. So I hope this isn't too shocking to you folks, but we can deal with this. The book is called Holy S ... Managing Manure to Save Mankind by Gene Logsdon. Huh, a good thing to know.
So Harold McGee in Nosedive also has a bit more to say about this. He talks about CAFOs, which are a big excrement producer here in Iowa. Lots of S dot, dot, dot. And he says, because he's talking about smells in this book, Nosedive. So the smells of CAFO are smells of modern industrial agriculture, different from manure, both in quality and significance. They're still organic, manifestations of the basic workings of living things. But they're the smells of a rupture in the system, in that nature and traditional agriculture returned matter and energy from the soil to the soil. They are the smells of organic matter and energy isolated and withheld from the broad cycles of life on Earth. Why don't CAFOs compost their excrement into manure? Because it doesn't pay. Chemists began to unravel which components of manure are essential plant nutrients in the 19th century. And then in the earliest 20th century, the German Fritz Haber and Carl Bosch figured out how to manufacture salts of ammonia in factories directly from nitrogen gas in the air. The key is using a tremendous amount of chemical energies. So from you know, coal, natural gas, sort of, you know, that fossil fuels. So across the world today, the use of synthetic fertilizers outweighs manure by something like 5 to 1.
Ha! Huh.
Yeah. So the problems with nitrogen overuse in Iowa and the problems with CAFOs we're all pretty well aware of. It has caused a lot of problems in our water system. Too much nitrogen that is not picked up. Synthetic nitrogen, which is not picked up and utilized by the soil, causes problems in our drinking water, for example. So not using the manure that we are producing from the animals that we have here in CAFOs is causing some difficulties.
Right. So maybe we can learn something from thinking about
the scale of manure.
Yeah, scale and how we use things. This is KHOI, and this is the Donna Lana Kitchen. You can find out more about us at www.khoifm.org. We are back. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. We're thinking about seeds and soil and compost and pitchforks and things. And I want to send a thought to farmers out there who are growing food for us. And especially, I found some news from the recent cold spell, the snap of cold, unprecedented weather that hit Texas. I heard that there is a number, approximately 6,000 small farms and orchards. We're talking citrus, folks, in Texas were affected quite negatively with this bit of winter that hit Texas. Things got a little cold on there. And I thought, well, this is terrible because some of the people that I order from are in Texas.
Seeds?
I order some onion plants. It's a great place to grow onions down there because they have day length. In other words, they get lots of more sun than we get this time of year. So they can start things a little earlier. I've always ordered from this place in southern Texas. So I get on the website and they say, okay, sorry, folks, things are a little hectic down here. However, we had 4 inches of snow fall on our fields, which had all these teeny tiny onions coming up, that acted as a blanket, thank goodness, because that night after the 4 inches of snow, which they don't normally get in southern Texas, their temperature fell to 13 degrees and they thought they were goners. But as the snow is melted, their little onions, which are pretty darn hardy little things, are looking like they are perking up. So thank goodness I will have my favorite onion varieties, I believe, and they will be shipped out in a few weeks. But they said, be care, be patient with us, folks. We are dealing with a whole big mess down here. Also, I want to mention, I mentioned sap earlier.
There's the sap is flowing, yeah. Yes.
There's a window here where maple syrup is happening. If you are in Ames and you happen to see a little two-wheel trailer that says Front Yard Sugar on the side of it, it's got some funny-looking equipment in it, kind of pumps and buckets and hoses, and that is a venture by a good friend of mine, Ben Hoch, who is doing what he calls community-supported maple syrup. He's making maple syrup.
From the trees around town.
From the trees around town. And front yard sugar really does mean that. If a tree is big enough, and he calls that about 17 inches around, he wants to go with the big trees because it makes it worth his while, he will come and make a deal with you to tap. And he's up and running now because it's kind of a window here between the cold and the warm. He's working his little tushy off this time of year. So if you see that front yard sugar and a guy with a bunch of buckets, that's Ben Hoch. If you'd like to find out more about front yard sugar, Ben Hoch, that's Hoch, is Hoch. He does a lot of stuff.
Yeah, so he will come and tap your trees, and then he boils it down, which is quite a sight, his whole boiling mechanism down in Lana's woods.
Yep.
And then he will deliver back to you a jar of your own maple syrup.
Is that good or what?
It is good.
And Donna gave me a really good recipe for waffles, so that's been kind of a big thing at my house lately. I do like maple syrup. And remember, it takes... Oh, what is it? Is it 7 to 1 or is it 10 to 1? You have to have a lot of sap. You have to get rid of a lot of moisture. Boil down.
You have to reduce it. Ooh. So his rig is these long metal troughs, I don't know, 6 or 8 feet or something, and he builds a wood fire under them. So the maple syrup that he's making has a slightly smoked flavor. It's really, really good.
It's a fun process. It's a hardworking process, but he does good. He does good. I kind of watch this. I'm my days of lifting maple syrup buckets. I'm so glad that younger people are doing this. Bless you, Ben, and all the people that help you. He came up with a really interesting thing to help carry buckets. Remember, we talked about pitchforks. Here is another tool you don't hear about much. A yoke, putting a yoke across your shoulder, a comfortably honed down wooden thing that helps you carry buckets on either side of you. It helps balance the load a bit more. He was playing around with that design last week, and I believe he's got it. So that's a good thing. So things are happening on the spring. So think about seeds. Think about maple syrup. And even if you could even tap your own trees, because even if you don't want to boil things down, you can drink that sap right out of the tree. It is an amazing.
It is. It's a very light sweetness, but it's also has a nice subtle mineral content for you. I mean, it's a little spring tonic.
Good for you. Good for you.
And fun for the children to see.
Good.
Because all children like maple syrup.
Yes. Well, thanks for joining us today. Next week on the Donalana Kitchen, we'll be talking with local farmer Jessica Kropika about farm to folk and CSAs. You've been listening to the Donalana Kitchen. You can hear us at Tuesdays at noon. We are here live. It's repeated at 7 p.m. on this fine radio station. Find past shows at khoifm.org. Stream, download, go to Talk, Donalana Kitchen Show for archives, recipes, videos, and a lot more than you ever want to know about Donna and Lana. Think spring, plant a seed. My name is Lana Nachtigal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
Thank you to Mike Murphy for excellent engineering. Eat good food and enjoy life.
They said it couldn't be done in these times, but together we did it. This winter, KHOI asked for $60,000 in membership donations to keep broadcasting in central Iowa. One by one, you and other KHOI listeners got us there. Thank you for your support.
You are enriching our community with the sounds of local voices and national grassroots voices. You are providing real information that helps us all understand and navigate these unprecedented and eventful times.